Welcome to the CEN Show, a platform where we learn from the world community. I'm your host, Roski Mascani, and on the panel this evening, we have Brother Ernest McBride Jr., Professor Amirai, and Carlene White. We also, our guest this evening is Brother Chiwara, and he invited another guest for us, so he'll introduce the guest that he invited, and we're just going to jump right into it. So I appreciate everybody attending this evening. Brother Chiwara, thanks for coming again, and you can get started.
Yes, greetings and divine, supreme, and immortal salutations to all. We're going to this evening engage in what we as Rasta term as reasoning. You could also look at it like a think tank type of thing. It's so equivalent to a think tank where we just talk about things and we try to see if we can come up with some solutions to many of our concerns and issues that may be in the community. With me this evening is my good brother, Global High Chief, David. And I would like, it'll be a reasoning between each and every one of us here, really. But we're going to set the pace. You know, we're going to talk about some things like sovereignty and what it is, dignity. We're going to talk about morality and morals and how does that contribute to humanity's decay today. We're going to talk about sovereignty and how it works and is connected to the conditions that we now are experiencing globally. So I'm going to allow Global High Chief David to kind of, you know, give you a synopsis of who he is and whatnot, so everyone could be kind of understanding where we're coming from. David, go ahead, please. Would you pick up from here?
Yes. Give thanks. Greetings, Otep, to each one. I'm proud and I'm happy. I'm proud of my brother, Chiwara, for what he's inspiring me to do at this time. I give thanks to the item presence. I am not the type of eloquent, you know, person, so I will just get kind of straight to it. My language will be mixed up between some American type English and some patois, you know, Jamaican Creole. And I must introduce before I go any further. The queen on the platform is Carlene White. I'm not seeing her video. She's still on the island. That is, you know, she having problem with internet and stuff like that, you know. But that's my secretary for my introduction of myself and a brief introduction of myself. I hold the position. I was fortunate to be given, and I shouldn't say given, but to bestowed a position of high chief, and because of my experience and my learning with the UN charters, I was appointed global high chief for the Nyankopang Sovereign Maroon Government. I spent over 3 decades in the United States, you know, frequent with the area of Washington, D.C., metropolitan area, South Florida, and here where we are right now into the Atlanta metropolitan area, you know, since 1990. I migrated here from the island. At that time, I used to use the term Jamaica. I don't anymore. So if you hear me use the term Jamaica or Jamaica or Ex-Jamaica, I'm referring to the island from our ancestors. As we go, I will explain the reason for the name that I really, you know, refer to where my island is concerned. I migrated in 1988 to the United States, in the metro, Washington DC metropolitan area, where I got exposed to the politics of the United States of America, and it kind of transmogrified me into a student of the Most Honorable Marcus Garvey. It hail His Imperial Majesty the Emperor, Haile Selassie I, Kwame Nkrumah, Patrice Lumumba. I did a lot of reading on our ancestors, the revolutionary spirits of our ancestors. And so in the process, a reality check had came to me, just to put it like that, while I was in the Washington, D.C. area. It was coming up into 1990, and the speech of George Herbert Walker Bush, was president at that inauguration. First time I've ever heard that word or recognized that word. And through that, it kind of opens me up to look into politics and just world event. And it kind of, we can use the term, it opened up this Pandora's box, because I'm trying to figure out why the politics of my island was totally different from the politics of the United States. Meaning that at the time that I migrated, it was like a death sentence being a young man on the island, base. And what we know then, and still know now, that it was the politics that actually devastate our island. And so with that, I never did really get the kind of, for you say, the affinity to see America as my home, to say a resting place, or I should say the United States of America, So I went on a quest to find out about politics, and it opens up my scope in different type of politics. I learned the word democratic socialism, and from Michael Manley, and it got me into a lot of reading and reading and reading and reading and reading, till it brought me to the place where I am now as the global I chief for the Nyankopang Sovereign Maroon Government. And how that happened is, while on my return home, I stay connected with the Rastafari, or the Rasta community, and with that, there is the Pit-4 Nyabingi Center, which reigns under the theocracy reigns of Nyabingi Order of Rastafari. That was my worship place. And in trying to I should say, articulate best for my brothers and sisters of some things that I have learned, which was about sovereignty and indigenousness, and that kind of scope, to let you know who you are and how you should operate as an individual that is sovereign. Articulating that was kind of a little battle. Rasta man, them really high wits, So you have to really have your thing together to really get certain things across to them. And it was kind of a pushback. However, there was this Rasta brother that were in the Maroon community. I should say that one of my quests was to see if I could put the Rastafari and Rasta community together under the nation, after this, under the indigenousness, which UNESCO had said to them that they are indigenous people. So, the Rastafari was founded on the island and stuff like that. However, so I knew that, and my quest for that was to reach out to the Rastafari community to let them understand that they have this instrument, which is that indigenous status from UNESCO, so for them to understand the principles of the United Nations, so they can put they put their nation together as the Rasta Nation, Rastafari Nation, however you want to class it. And it was very difficult going across. So this Rasta brother was kind of close with the Maroon community, and that was part of the plan, was for the Rastafari to come together, and then we reach out to the Maroon community and integrate that right there. So, and then we would have more so 2/3 of the island that would give us that status that we could really control our island and its people. However, it was kind of difficult. So this Rasta brother called me one day and said to me that the emperor wants to talk to you. So I said, the emperor? I said, who that? He said, LA. You know LA? I said, yeah, I know of the brother and things like that. So he said, yes, he's the emperor of the Nyankopang Sovereign Maroon, and he would like to talk to you. So he gave him the phone. I spoke to the emperor, and the emperor said, asked me where I was. I said that, if I can come and see him at the moment. So I couldn't. I told him I'll see him the next morning, and I was there the next morning at his office, and we had a discussion, and I explained, he questioned me on things that I know, and he realized that I actually know some of these things. So he took me to his sacred place, and he opens up a safe, and he took out some documents. And it's as if when I saw those documents, my, they call cold bump just take you over, and it's just like, it was just this different energy that really, opens up something else for me, because I know that these documents exist. And if you know how to understand these documents, you have more power than the average person with that mindset that know who they are, And so he showed me some documents also about, swearing allegiance to the constitution of the Nyankopang Sovereign Maroon government, which in actuality, swearing allegiance to ensure that the emperor stays safe and protected at all times. So I am what I've seen and knowing of the brother, it was hard for me to really accept and swear allegiance, and give my time and work and my intelligence to the Nyankopang Sovereign Maroon Global Tribal Nation territories, natives of Ex-Amica, Atlantis, North America. So I guess that kind of summarized that up, and we can go into over the 30 years that I just didn't want to stay in the United States. I've done a lot of work here. I've really put in some time, and I learned a lot. However, that passion that keeps me to that portal was always there to say, you need to come home. And I can give stories of incidents that people don't know me, and I don't never see them before. And they just say to me, you need to go home. You need to go home. So I took that mandate from the people, and I am on the ground, and I serve now proudly as the Global High Chief for the Nyankopang Sovereign Maroon on the island of Jamaica, Ex-Amica. And I will heal on that right there. I hope, Brother Chiwara, that I represented you well in speaking to your brilliant and you should say, I call it kind of a wonderful lifetime moment to speak to great people, So I appreciate love you bringing me to this light, so we can shine a little bit brighter. So give thanks, brother.
Yes. I give thanks for your introduction to sovereignty, and being sovereign. One of the things I want to stress, what is exactly sovereignty? The word itself, what is it referring to? We're referring to sovereignty is defined, from a dictionary standpoint as supreme power or authority. Supreme power or authority, it is dealing with independent authority, away from an oligarchy or a state of governing body. You have its over its own territory, people and laws, meaning it can govern itself without external influences. It is the ultimate power to make and enforce laws, control its resources, and defend its existence, resting with the people in democracies exercised through representatives or a monarch in others. This is just, the main thing is that it is a supremely independent authority or state or governing of body has over its own territory. People laws, meaning it can govern itself without external interference. So we're talking about the ability for us, and we're speaking as a community, we're speaking as a people, as a nation. Our identity is indigenous. And with that, nothing can alter that. Nothing alters your identity. No matter where a Chinese man go, he will be a Chinese man. No matter where a black man goes, he will be a black man. The word black doesn't change the person. The word Negro doesn't change the person. What he is, your identity is who you are. And so sovereignty is something that we as a people, especially in America, we don't really look at because we're in a different kind of a position when it comes to how the black people in America actually integrate with the idea of nation, of national. Most black people in America, whether you come from the islands to America or from Africa, the mother, father, continent to America, whether you come from Canada or South America to America, you're still an indigenous black person, man or woman. And that's how America sees you. And we, outside of Barack Obama, in this modern era, we'd never saw or thought that would ever happen, a black man and a black woman as first lady in the White House. That was quite a, it was like a miracle. It was like something that no one really expected. And many of us thought we'd never live to see that day. We all give thanks that we are able to see that day, So, sovereignty is very important. It's important for us as a people in America, black people in America, as well as in the Caribbean islands, to address that. And there are laws within the United Nations. The UN DRIP is one of those. The Declaration on Human Rights is one of those. Martin Luther King mentioned also that we need to embrace human rights more so than civil rights. Once he realized what he had achieved, and he became very concerned about it because he stated that he feels that he has led his people into a burning building, into a burning building. And that's, I'm paraphrasing, I'm not trying to be exactly what he says, but I think many of us are familiar with that statement that Martin Luther King made within the last few days or time of his life, So we've all being, we are all familiar with our indigenous identity. We all identify, we all know as a people that we are the original people, not only of the planet of America, but we are the original people of the entire planet. So we want to address that, so sovereignty that, and I welcome questions. I need reasoning. I need the guests, the audience to, chime in, and because this is a reasoning session. We want to reason with the host. We want to reason with Amin-Ra. We want to reason with Ernest McBride. We want to reason with Carlene White. We want to reason with one another because that's what makes it. This is why it's a reasoning, and we want to take it into areas where it's uncommon.
So,
We need to unite and unite more.
Brother Chiwara,
Yes.
so we're speaking of sovereignty.
Yes.
So first we I think what has to be identified is what, why aren't we sovereign? And what position do we hold where we are? You know, if we're speaking of sovereignty, what is our position, and what are some things we can do to move towards sovereignty? Because I have ideas that I've gathered through, you know, dealing with or learning and observing through interacting with people of yourself, or Professor Amun-Ra, other educators. And so first I want to know, where do you see us in light of sovereignty?
Okay.
What is our position?
Okay, this is our position as far as I can see, and I welcome anyone else to really chime in and speak on this issue. One of the first things we have to identify is, where does sovereignty begin? Is there a beginning? Is there a starting point? Where does sovereignty starts? And if we want to say, where does it start, then it has to have an end. What I've discovered is that you're actually born sovereign. No one can make you sovereign. You have the right to self-determination, self-reliance, and self-sufficiency. You have the right to sustain and maintain yourself. You have the right to educate yourself. You have the right to be your own spiritual conduit in your relationship to energy. Energy, you know, as a Rasta, I see energy as what they call in God. And I spoke about that in previous podcasts that we did here. So sovereignty is something that we're born with. The question becomes, do we have the courage to just stand up and build for ourselves without asking permission to build for ourselves? Do we have the courage to provide our own health care without, you know, asking permission? Do we have the courage to educate our children ourselves, take full responsibility for our lives ourselves without asking permission from any entity, governmental system, or anything? Do we have the courage to govern ourselves as a people? See, that's what the question is, and that's where we stand today. And until we can answer that, until we can see that our sovereignty came to us through our birth, it's our birthright to self-determination, to self-sufficiency, and self-reliance. These are the things that is birth out of sovereignty, and sovereignty is birth into that. And when we exercise that, we can definitely, then we are being sovereign. Now, it comes with pushback. It comes with a lot of other things, of course, obviously. That's why I say, do we have the courage? Because it's going to take courage, as well as not just courage, but it's going to take knowledge. It's going to take ability, capability. We can't, you know, we have to be educated, which we are. You know, we have to be creative, which we are. And all of these things, you know, Black people are very creative. So, you know.
So then I think it comes to identification of do we have a group, a whole of sufficient amount of people that identify as Black and have a cultural apparatus to build from to move towards that? Because and I know Professor Amun-Ra can speak to this very well. If we don't have a cultural group that identifies with each other, because you have a lot of people who say that I'm American. So if you just straight American, then you don't identify as being Black. So I think Professor Ra, it'd be a good time for you to chime in when it comes to that point.
Appreciate what you asked, if I understand correctly. You hear me?
Yes, good. Well, very well.
First of all, I want to say welcome, Brother Shirara, and welcome, Brother David. Glad y'all are on. And you made some good points, and appreciating your conversation, if I understand correctly. The issue is, are you talking about a sense of psychological sovereignty? Are you talking about sovereignty when you say self-determination? You know, you need an economic base, you need a political base, you need an education base structure, and ideology and philosophy that's different from the one that you're under. The problem is that you definitely need a military to defend your sovereignty. Now, it could be a mental sovereignty. You can feel sovereign. And some of us do. Some of us have chosen lifestyles that are different from being American. But the majority of our people, the American, they want their hearts and minds, and they're comfortable in their oppression. And to tell someone that they have sovereignty, they already feel that they have sovereignty under Americanism. You know, the Americans didn't convince them that they're free and that they can choose Taco Bell or McDonald's and that they can do everything except for share power and share economic prosperity. And when it comes to Black people or African people, no matter what identity you choose, from the Caribbean to various religions and various cultural apparatus that many of our people have chose, such as Rastafari and Haile Selassie and the last line of Judah and all of that, you know. But at the same time, we have to face reality. Most of our people, because they've been acculturated, absorbed in Euro-American culture, it's very hard for them to even think of cutting the umbilical cord that gives them life from the standpoint of jobs and from the standpoint of a aspect of fulfilling their dreams of being a better American. You got Black people joining the Army, joining the Navy, joining the Air Force, joining the National Guard, trying to get some of the benefits that America offers. You got people going to European schools trying to get the education that the dominant society. And I agree we should be building, we should have done build alternatives. Some people do self-education, like what you and David is doing. You know, y'all are educating yourself. You sure didn't learn this way of thinking in public schools, and you sure didn't learn it from the standpoint of any Christian religion, Muslim religion, or Jewish religion of the major religions. This is a different trend of thought. But convincing today's people that they have sovereignty, and they do believe they have sovereignty because they see that they are Americans, and America is telling them that they have American sovereignty. What you're talking about is Black people having their own sovereignty. And that's going to be a struggle to get to that point mentally, spiritually, and physically. You have to struggle. You have to choose to exercise your sovereignty. But you have a habit of being an American. You choose. You choose to be Rastafari. You choose. No, nobody made you be it. You made that choice. And that's a sovereignty. Because you made it on your own. You know, you govern yourself. You decided to have a different frame of reference. Most Americans are Christians. And they go by the Christian doctrine. And that includes a large percentage of Black people. You got ministers that's preaching about going to heaven. And give me your money. And you can go pay your tithe. And don't believe in, you know, we tell people don't believe in ghosts, but they believe in the Holy Ghost. So what can you tell me? You know, I mean, I don't know what to tell them. But I see the contradictions, but I think it's a good concept to tell people to get their personal sovereignty and become individually self-determined and become individually govern themselves and try to do as much as they can to cycle the dollar that comes back into the community by spending black or spending African and things of this nature. But you have to choose to do that. We have a place called Amerk Park. Beautiful spot. Nothing but brothers and sisters out there selling their wares and selling their gifts and selling their African clothing and selling their jewelry and selling their paintings and art every weekend. And, you know, you think the majority of the people going to go there to get Kwanzaa gifts or Christmas gifts or birthday gifts? Not the majority, but those that are conscious go. And those that want to practice their economic sovereignty go. And those that have that cultural knowledge go. But the majority of people at Target, they're at Costco's and they're at Macy's. Those at the high end and so it's a challenge from that standpoint. But I believe in self-sovereignty and self-governance and self-reliance and self-determination and cooperative economics and unity. But I choose to practice that. It's hard to get the brother trying to get a crack pipe to think that he has sovereignty when he's been surrendered his life to drugs, or alcohol. It's hard to. And many of our people have resorted to that to escape from the realities.
Okay. Yes, yes. I completely concur with what you're saying. It is true. And what you're saying is real. You know, when we speak of sovereignty, we're not speaking of personal sovereignty. We're speaking of sovereignty as it is, not just to humanity, to all of nature itself. All of nature is sovereign. The earth is sovereign. The skies are sovereign. Every creature is sovereign and has the right to exist within its set natural manifestation as well as habitat. Now, man is the only one that violates that. No other aspect of nature violates that. So, although, yes, amongst us, as human beings and as diverse cultures, we tend to look at things as an individual thing, and it is to a certain extent. But when we speak as liberated people, when we're speaking as liberated people, we lose that individualism. We lose that sense of, you know, I'm going to choose this and I can choose that and I can choose this, because that's just comes with life. We choose as individuals. That's a normal and a natural thing. What becomes a problem is when we begin to say we're going to live our sovereignty in a moral foundation. Now, people have biases when it comes to that, and people begin to want to define morality. Well, every man knows what's right and what's wrong. So, you know, people that think that what's right for them is right for them, and what's right for them may be the oppression of others. You know, like the colonizers, the colonialist, imperialist, marauding, plundering group of people that came into the indigenous people's domain after receiving knowledge from the same indigenous people. After receiving resources from these same indigenous people, which were the human, which were the civilized people, they turned around and made it seem as if indigenous people were the savages and needed to be rehabilitated or be fixed. This is how the colonizers justify their behavior. To them, their behavior is moral. To the Aboriginal world, they were absolute savages and immoral people. So we're talking about reestablishing who we are, and there are laws on this earth that says we have the right to do that. So sovereignty addresses that. It's not really a thing of choice. Everyone is sovereign. But the only choice that we have as a sovereign is to give it up or to keep it, to defend it or to conform to some other set of existence or state of being. If we choose to conform, then we have what we have in today's society, the diverse, the opposing, ununified, not just black people, every people. This is not just exclusive to black people or to African American or to Negroes, whatever term they want to apply to my identity. It's the same thing. Everyone has sovereignty and everyone has the choice, yes, to live as a sovereign. We can do it individually if we like, then we just individually and we state those things, and we live in the same society that's oppressing us as individual sovereigns and defend our individual rights. Now, that's not going to benefit anyone else but that individual and his family. And if the dominant society should say, hey, this guy is practicing sovereignty. He's practicing self-determination, self-sufficiency, and self-reliance. We need to get rid of him because he's disturbing our home, our whole operation. Well, he's done. We've seen it in Patrice Lumumba. We've seen it in Thomas Sankara. We've seen it in Muammar Gaddafi. We've seen it in endless Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Marcus Garvey. We've seen it in endless individual black figures that have come up, both male and female, both on the continent, mother, father, Africa, both on the continent of the Americas. We've seen it here. So what we're speaking of actually is not so much that we're not addressing so much the diversity in people, or that we're trying to save the crackhead or the alcoholic. We're not trying to do that. We're simply saying if all the people have to eat is McDonald's and Wendy's, and it's killing them because they're under attack, they've weaponized food, they've weaponized a whole lot of other things other than food too. But how can we say they have a chance unless we give them some other choice? The choice is stand up for your rights, your natural rights, your universal rights, your common rights, your sovereign rights, your right to self-determination, your rights to self-sufficiency. A lot of people out there don't even know that they can do that.
To go with this other 3-year proposal.
You know, so that's the issue for us, you know, and how do we get here? And who are we as a people? Because you cannot find yourself if you don't know who you are. You don't know what to look for if you don't know who you are. You know, we're more than just flesh and blood. We're more than just black people. It's the genius. It's what's inside the black people. It's what's inside us that the world fears. The world fears our genius. The world fears our level of morality. The world fears our level of humanity. The world fears that we will straighten this out, and we have done it already. We have saved this world many, many times over. You know, when the other ethnic groups have just ruined it and brought it to dog or near destruction. So that's, you know, that's one of the issues I really want to bring out, that those who vibrate at the right frequency and level have to unite. Yes, we're going to leave a lot of people behind. But when you farm, not every seed that you plant is going to go to market. Some of them is not going to be at the right standard. The value of the seed is all the same when we start out. All seeds are valuable. But once you put them into the earth and they open up, then we begin to see the standard. And we set a standard. We have to set a standard in which we'll be able to take to the market, and we're able to exchange as value and develop commerce and be progressive. That's what we're addressing. We know that we're in bad condition, that we are damaged goods, you know, but still we're here. And the world is freaking out because why are we still here? That's the big thing with the world. Why? We're black. Why are we still here? We have been through hell. And that's an understatement. Hell is an understatement. Because I don't think hell is as horrible as what we have suffered and is still suffering today at the hands of the neo-colonialists. And those that are just anti-self that are amongst us.
Brother Tawara.
Yes.
I know we didn't have this conversation a few times already. And I just wanted to see what Ernest McBride thinks so far.
Yes.
Cinda and Carlene, if she wants to chime in. I want to see what they have to say so far. And then I know Brother David hasn't spoken specifically about sovereignty. So, or if he did, I didn't catch it. But I would like to, you know, see what they have to say, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. This is reasoning. We all are free to speak. We need to practice freedom of speech.
Okay. Brother Ernest, from what you heard already, what do you kind of take from that, and what do you kind of say about it?
Well, I would just, you know, I agree with what they're saying and everything, but my life, you know, I grew up here in California. Okay, I went to school all my life in Long Beach, you know, kindergarten to come up through school, had a problem maybe about the kindergarten in the first grade with kids calling me out of my name, you know. But once I had a couple of fights, beat two or three kids up, then the whole school respected me, and I never had that problem. After that, you know, coming up through grade school, and then I never felt discriminated against because, you know, even though my mother tried to teach me about it because she was from Fort Worth, Texas, and my dad was from Mississippi. And he even come out in, he started the NAACP, and he would talk about Jim Crow and blacks being discriminated. But I never really faced that until I got drafted in the Army. And my mother was trying to teach me, well, you know, you never been South and all that. My dad never said nothing. So he can handle himself wherever he goes, so don't worry about it. So she would tell me, well, you should do this in Texas. You have to be careful and all that. But when I got to in the Army, they sent me from Fort Ord, California to White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico because I had an associate degree in electronics technology. So they put me in radar systems. Army taught me that, you know, to learn radar systems. And then, we'd go to town to El Paso, Texas a lot, but every white person, even that I encountered there, they always addressed me as sir. How do you do, sir? And real nice, you know? So to me, I never felt being discriminated against, but I went on jobs and my dad, you know, kind of told me, you learn the job if you're going to apply for it and learn all you can. I go fill out applications. A couple of times I go to places and they try to deny you. Well, we're not hiring the secretary, but I say, well, do you guys ever hire? Well, yeah, we might initial. Do you have applications? Well, yeah, don't take no for an answer. Well, I need to fill one out, because then if you hire, I'll be in the system. And then that's how I got my first good job with the National Cash Register Company. I go there Thursday, and the girl tells me she's not going to hire me, but my dad had told me to always push for what you want and to get equal treatment. So I always did that, and then I was successful most of the time. So I was able to get a job with the Navy.
Right.
I got out of the Army, and had them train me more at Cal State Long Beach, Professor Amon-Ra's old alma mater. And but I also played sports. I was good in sports, so I got a athletic scholarship there after getting out of the Army, and I was able to get my bachelor's and my master's. Then my job trained me on that. So, all my I, and I we ran through a couple of things on our job where they did try not to promote the black guys, but promote the white guys. So we didn't. I didn't stand for that. So I threatened to, because my dad always told me where to go fight and what to do. I go to Fair Employment Practice Commission, file a complaint against them, and then that got rid of that discrimination because they stopped doing it. So we stopped them from doing so, even though, I would expect to have to fight for whatever I got. And so I didn't feel as though. And even some of the guys that worked with me was able to help bringing them along, so and then when I started trying to learn about Rastafari, when I got into Bob Marley's music and started to learn about it, and like Professor Ross says, but see, I'm to the point now, because like I'm 87 years old, been retired for like 28 years. I haven't worked, and I'm kind of a caregiver for my wife, so we're just kind of in our own little shell, so, and I don't really know what's going on. A lot of the youth that I do have contact with her, because I'm always over at the high school, because I used to coach over there, and I keep track and field records, so that give me an opportunity to talk to a lot of the kids and tell them, say, man, just fight, don't, you just have to fight for what you want. But I expect I see other white guys that I knew, friends of mine, they got to fight too, because to me it looked like it's instead of a black and white issue, it's becoming a green issue. It's funny,
Okay.
America, yeah.
Brother Ernest,
The
Brother
man that
Ernest.
got the money, makes the rules, so to speak. So
Brother
that
Ernest,
was my
Brother
attitude.
Ernest.
So I
I don't mean to just interrupt you, okay?
no.
But first one, I want to ask you a question. What part of Mississippi your father from?
Carrollton, North Carrollton, Mississippi.
How far is that from like Coahoma County in the Delta?
Yeah, well, he was his dad used to farm down in the Delta, because what
Okay.
he had
Okay.
about 30 years, he used to be down in the Delta a lot. Jackson,
Now,
Mississippi, Birmingham.
now you 80 plus. You
Yeah,
80
only
plus.
87 now.
Now, and you have a world of experience.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, when we say sovereignty, we're talking about collecting those people, and I'm talking about gathering those people along with the young people. And we're also talking about no more fighting. No more fighting. We don't have to fight for nothing. We don't have to fight for anything to gain something anymore. It's over with. We're talking about organizing. And when we speak of sovereignty, we're talking about the courage to return to our true position. You would be known as an elder. They have us functioning as elderly. That's a different thing. The elders guide the youths. They guide the ones that are coming. And the youth have the respect for the elders. We need to reestablish that. That's a part of our culture. That connects us to who we are. If we don't know who we are, we cannot return to who we are. If we don't know who we are, we're not able to find ourselves. It's not, I'm 70. I just turned 70 this year. I'm interfacing with a brother here in the Atlanta area. He's 86. Me and him came together tight. We're building, and it's not about, it's just about building something. It doesn't have to be big. You see, because when we begin to work together and be obedient with what was given to us, we've been given a gift of grace. We survived hell quadruple times as a people. And in this 21st century, we are released. We have been released from the pains and the struggles. We have all the education. We have all the motivation. We have all the creativity. We have everything, not just in America, in the Caribbean, in the mother, father continent of Africa, in Canada, wherever you find Black people, they are the best at whatever they do. We have to recognize that. We have to have faith in that. We have to gather that. And we have to come to ourselves without fear. That's why I spoke of courage. See, you have to have courage to be sovereign. You can't have biases like, oh, you know, if I'm sovereign, well, how am I going to survive? No, you build what you need. But it, at the nucleus of sovereignty, is one thing very important to understand. We must create security. Because what stops a lot of us is fear. Fear that, oh, somebody's going to come and kill us because we've been killed. I mean, it's more than 400 years now. We've been killed and murdered for over 2,600 years. Okay? You only hear people talk about 400 years of slavery. No, it's been more than that. So what we have to understand is a lot of things that is being handed down through the DNA, through epigenetics, you know, how they used to use the Black men to breed. So we try to find out, why is these Black men running around here impregnating all these women and not taking responsibility? That's epigenetics. That was handed down in our DNA. We had 4 wives, 5 wives, 6 wives, 7 wives, 10 wives, 12 wives, 20 wives. In our culture is different. There were no need to feel like we need to go breathe.
Oh,
we need to breathe. So what's happening is, oh yeah, this is a good friend of mine and a young goddess named Kadana Jacob. Hey Kadana, how you doing? So beautiful to see that you came in. Rasaki, hey, Kadana, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, this is a beautiful goddess.
Hi.
You know, we've been working together for several years. She gained so much out of life. She became a nurse. She's like a successful mother. She cares for children. So these are the things what sovereignty does. What we need to do is not do what we do in their system. Now, we have the ability to have our own system. This is what sovereignty is about. But we have to be able to protect it, secure. If we could have protected Rosewood, they couldn't have burned it. If we could have protected all those towns, and there's thousands of them that they destroyed, they would not have been able to destroy it. We were not enough of a threat to them. The only thing that was threatening to them was that we were sovereign. We were independent. We took care of our business. We raised our children. We had our own businesses. That's what was a threat to them. Not that we were Black. Not that we were Black. They knew the power that our DNA holds. And we need to return to that. We need to become the gods and the goddesses that they said had built those pyramids. They said the gods, this must be the work of the gods. Just overlooking the people that were there, like there's no people there. That's like Christopher Columbus came in and said, I discovered America, like there was nobody here.
Yeah.
So we got to understand what we're up against. One of the first things we got to do, I believe, is understand that we must heal ourselves. And that's a simple thing. Change our thinking heals us. Okay? Then we must strengthen ourselves. We must develop ourselves. We must build. And once we do these things, now we got to keep a knowledge that we must secure what we and who we are. Security. That means, you know, what do they say? An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. You see, we have to know that that's really what it's all about. At the end of the day, that's what it's about. If we're not willing to live for what, for our generations, for what we deserve, for our birthright, then we're not worth even the death of ourselves. We're not even worth that, because we're here to live. We're not here to die. But there are those that wants us to be dead.
Brother,
so we have to understand that. So that's what sovereignty is all about, you know.
Brother Chawar,
I give you thanks, Brother Ernest. Thank you so much.
Brother Chawar?
Yes.
Want to hear from, I want to see if Carlene White has anything that you want to contribute or question for you.
Yes.
Carlene?
Okay. So as the topic is about sovereignty, and as far as I have learned about sovereignty is that we are free people. We are free because of our ancestors' birthright, our bloodline, and what has left for us as individuals, knowing that we were fought, they have fought for us, and left a legacy for us to be free, sovereign people. Indeed, they colonize us and they take us into captivity, put us in their own jurisdiction as if they own us. They don't own us. We are free people, i.e.
Yes, I can't say anything on that, because that is bullseye. That's what it's all about at the end of the day. We are at the point now today where we must reclaim that. We must reclaim that. We must acknowledge and accept that we are sons and daughters of the Creator. We are sons and daughters. We are the closest to God, that which they call God, than any other ethnicity. This is proven, and you can go research that this is proven by the mathematician Gabriel Oyibo, when he came up with the God Almighty's Grand Unified Theorem, acronym GAGUT, GAGUT. And another physicist, mathematician, from his name is Gupta, from India, wrote a letter to Gabriel Oyibo and was congratulating him on his discovery of the God equation. And he said to him in this letter, "You are closer than any of us to God. You're closer to God than any of us." Now that's point blank. Now you see the genius in ourselves when you look at Chikumbutso, who created the clean energy from transistor waves. You can see that in Julian Brown, who take waste plastic and converts it to plastiline, a form of, you know, fuel that drives, that can fuel airplanes, can fuel any kind of vehicle. So, and that's just the name of few. And I have a scientist here, you know, in Georgia, that, you know, he does wonders with soil, you know, the Amazon microbes from the Amazon rainforest. And he also does stuff with like the same thing. He makes fuel or energy, electricity out of waste matter. And he also converts the energy from plants into usable, renewable, clean energy. So we are the people. The new Silicon Valley is right now freaking out because they're saying, how are we doing this? There's a young man from Namibia who created a cell phone that works without cell towers. Works without cell towers and without chips and a chip in there and everything like that. You don't hear nothing about Elon Musk. But why? Because his whole program of electric cars is done. We are ahead by light years. So what I'm saying is America has created a population of black people known as consumers. We spend more money than any other ethnic group in America. When Emancipation Proclamation came about, let's say the first 100 years or whatever, once they found out what how to break us down, we were considered the most skilled ethnicity in the entire America. There was no one more skilled than our people. And, you know, rightly so. We came off of a plantation where we did everything. The master didn't do anything. He was about the laziest of all species. And those who supported this so-called slave trade or this legalized slavery in America, which were the Northern Caucasian, they were all lazy, but they transposed that character onto the black persona. And they said, we're lazy. We're shuffling. After Emancipation Proclamation, and gone, you're free. They had to do something. They had to stop our progressive energy. Because all we did was say, okay, they're not giving us anything to do. We're going to build our own. And that's what we did. And we were already in the political system. So, you know, I'd like to hear something from Kadana. You know, I'd like to a response
Brother
from her.
Gerard, we had a few other people here before her. And then mm-hmm. also, I wanted to hear from the other guest, David Cook.
Sure.
About, you know, some of the points on sovereignty.
David.
Yes, I give thanks. Give thanks to the more presence. You know, yes, in listening, I can reason on some topics of personal experience where sovereignty is concerned. On my trod, you know, across the Americas, from Canada, you know, and all the states in the United States of America, and in talking to family and friends from the island, one of the things that a question I always ask if they read the Jamaica Constitution. And really, to my surprise, each person I asked their formal academical educational level was way much greater than mine. And for me to read the US Constitution, read the Jamaica Constitution, read Ethiopian Constitution, the Ethiopian World Federation Constitution, and several other constitutions across the globe that I read, Ghana, Nigeria, all of these constitutions I read. And to ask my people from the island if they ever read the Constitution, and to my surprise, so far in asking, I'm talking about since the 2000s, it's only a handful, probably one hand, about five or six people have said, yes, they read the Constitution. And those people, including senior superintendent of the Jamaica Constabulary Force, attorneys, and it was one other person. I think it was a teacher, a principal guy. I asked, and he says yes. So it was just these few people in my peers that have ever read the Constitution. Now, reading the Constitution bring me to a few points in the Constitution. Chapter 3 and Chapter 6 out of Jamaica, and it's not really a constitution because the document says Jamaica Order in Council 1962, constitution in brackets. And when they put the constitution in it was after 2011, after they amended to put in the fundamental rights and freedom, which was adoption from the universal rights and fundamental freedom for people globally. Now, in reading that and asking my people if they didn't read it, then I came to recognize that my people is totally ignorant of the governing law that they govern under. And I see the same thing here in the United States of America. When I go around and I ask melanated Americans if they read the Constitution, the only ones that says yes is the ones that do political science and the ones that are attorneys and, you know, and so on. And so it leads me to see the reason why we are in the situation that we are in. It's a simple ignorance that that people do not read these documents. And that's where sovereignty comes in now. Because in reading the Jamaica document, when you reach chapter 6 of the Jamaica document, it says chapter 6, 60, section 68, 68 is executive powers. 68.1 is the executive, said executive authority of Jamaica is vested in Her Majesty. Now, that takes away sovereignty on paper for the Jamaican people, because that document, as long as you say that you're a Jamaican or you register to the Register General Department, meaning your children, you register your wife, have the child, and the child register, get that birth document. You just register your child under the status of the colonizers, which really takes away the rights of your natural sovereignty. Now, when you recognize that the people is totally ignorant from their natural rights, the natural given, that natural right for you to be alive after you were reincarnated. Most people do not even understand the power that they have. And I'm going to speak more of the recognition of the Jamaican paperwork, right? Of the Jamaican documents. Now, the Jamaican documents is totally a slave document. And most of the people don't know. The United States of America, there is one chief. While I was here and I was listening, I was trying to find this chief. His name is very, you know, long to pronounce. However, he is filing lawsuit against several states right now. In the Illinois, he started the first lawsuit. And the reason for that lawsuit was what the state of Illinois was doing is registering native children under the U.S. status, that's United States of America, with the state document as live birth in the state of Illinois. Now, this chief now recognized that this is a fraud, similar fraud on the island. Now, when you register to the state of Jamaica, you gives up that sovereignty. And what they did over periods, you know, it's like every 10, 15 years, they do a new form. So everybody have to come in and get this new form to give you this new paper, which what they do is that now you become of age, of recognition. When you go and you re-register to get that new birth certificate or birth document, you voluntarily register to the state. Now, if you continue to do that, you die and you will never know that you had a choice. And what that choice is that same thing that we're talking about, that individual self-determination, self-governance. You know, so in hearing Professor speak now, and he spoke about that, Akufu,
Professor Ra.
Professor Ra. No, that's Ernest. When I heard Brother Ernest spoke about, or yes. I should say, my apologies, I should say, Elder Ernest says that, you know, how is growing up, and he was determined and all of that. I was the same thing. You know, my dad didn't have to tell me that I should be this person. I was just that energy that I was the leader. I was always in front. You know, I was always telling my little brethren them, go over there, let's go do this, all that. And they always run behind me. And, you know, I came out of a family that my father's last name is Cook, which is a prominent name on the island. My mother's last name is Windham, which is a prominent international name. You know, so in that retrospect, I never really faced any pushback. You know, I came to the United States, and whenever time I get that pushback, I always push harder, you know, and stand up as this person. I say, hey, you can't talk to me like that. You know, you can't do this. However, in doing so, it opens me up to say that most of my people who do not do that, what is wrong? Why they do not stand up to let it be at the point that it is today? Now, that point that it is today is to say that one of my quests when I used to ask my U.S. Melanated, my American melanated brothers and sisters about reading the Constitution, I'm saying that if they have really read and understand that Constitution, why isn't it that the melanated Americans have not put a Constitution together for themselves and evoke this instrument from the United Nations that the UNDRIP, I heard Brother Chiwara talk about, which is the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. So is it all melanated people on this American, you know, continent is going to say that we all came here as slaves? Or some of the brothers and sisters here is going to say, well, you know, when they brought some of our brothers and sisters here, we were here before. We were here mm-hmm. a long time. Now, right. Seeing that makes you indigenous. However, for the length of time that our brothers and sisters that they brought over to the Western Hemisphere in that savagery, for the time that they are here, oh, yeah, we are indigenous also to this right here. Because the children, 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 children after the children becomes an indigenous group of people. So the ones who were here before who recognize that should lead the way and take on the ILO 169, International Labor Organization, and the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, set a constitution together and create that melanated American nation. Now we would have enough of Brother Ernest to be the military advisors. We will have enough of Brother Afu to be the professor, the academics to lead our people. We would have all the rest of us that has these accolades that could be the molder of this nation. Now, that is what sovereignty is.
Yes.
As long as you have that document says that, you know, the Department of Georgia Vital Statistics Certificate of Live Birth. As long as it say Georgia, which is a state for the United States, is a province, is basically an entity of the United States. You become sovereign under the United States of America. But what about that sovereign status before the United States of America was created? You know, what were before that? Only these people down in our brothers and sisters down in Florida, the Seminoles, or the ones who, you know, claim that they are Cheyenne or some other, you know, lightly looking Native America, to use that term, or we are going to be looking at us as a melanated people and say it's time for us to create our own sovereign nation. That is what Captain Ibrahim Touré, yes, right now is fighting for.
Yes.
Every word, every statement that that brother make, he spoke about sovereignty. If we do not have sovereignty in our food, we do not have food security. Because as Brother Chiwara had stated, that sovereignty means that you have supreme control. We do not have supreme control over our food. We do not have supreme control over the medicine. We do not have supreme control over the academic system in on this here United States of America. We don't have that on the island of Jamaica for the people, because the executor of of Jamaica, which is a state, not really our island, you know, the executor is Elizabeth. Now, that's where we are now, my brothers and sisters. The Nyankopang sovereign maroon government constituted themselves on the island of Ex-Jamaica. And not only that, when our document was sent to the United Nations, it has this important word in it, global. Global. So we are a global government, a global nation, because our people, the movement, is right across the globe. So the centralized system of the Nyankopang Maroon government is sitting in the Ashanti town of what they call Kingstown, which is the Ashanti people town. These names that we use now is the names of the colonizers. You know, if we should go into the our ancestors' name for places on the island, then you would find that they would use different names for the area. Just the same thing here in the States. You know, in certain names that's there. Where is the name of the Mayans? You know, where's the name of our brothers? And where is the name of these people? They have to die for them to get a name somewhere. It's us now. That is in, I know, and I'm respectful of my elders. I am 59 in 2 months. I will be 60 years of age. So I am thankful for the leadership, you know, of Brother Chiwara and the greater leadership, you know, for my other elders that is here. I read the Bible, you know, but I'm not this biblical person, but there are some words in it that I use to articulate things, you know, because it seems right. And things like, what has been hidden from the wise and the prudent shall reveal to the babe and the suckling. You know, that prophecy it has revealed to myself because of what I have discovered, you know, in reading these documents that was set down there. We have treaties from 16 centuries. The Maroon Treaty of the island that the British came and signed was 1738. They don't teach these things in high school. They don't teach us to go and look at these treaties, the Moroccan treaties. They don't teach us how to you know, where to look to know that these documents, these instruments was laid down by our ancestors for us to be liberated. And I'm gonna conclude on this one other sovereign document. Now, you know, Ethiopia was the only so-called country on the continent of Alkabulan that the Europeans did not get there yet to really, you know, conquer, so to use that word. So with that, they are have been the only sovereign nation on the continent. Now, His Imperial Majesty the Emperor Haile Selassie I had sanctioned a document, and that document was the Ethiopian World Federation incorporated also with the Ethiopian Orthodox Church. And that document, once you become a member of the Ethiopian World Federation Incorporated, you are sovereign under the Ethiopian Constitution. A lot of people didn't know that. You know, when His Imperial Majesty sent the youths them from Ethiopia after, you know, they got rid of this wicked man and his people out of Ethiopia, and he started to send the children across the globe. He sent them with the Ethiopian World Federation Incorporated for us, all of us, melanated people across the globe, knowing now that we were conquered, except for Ethiopia. He sent that document out for them, for us to be sovereign with that document. It just so happened that so many years passed and we haven't done so. However, we have the sovereign document into the Western Hemisphere now, which is the Nyankopang Sovereign Maroon Global Government. And we can elaborate on that a little bit more as we go, if what I said makes, you know, makes that point on sovereignty. I yield on that.
Okay.
Wonderful. Yes. Wonderful.
Brother Tawara?
Yes.
I want to get to Brother Mashinda and
yes.
Anna.
Yes.
But before we get to them, I think what I must say is that the brother brought up some major points about people not knowing the Constitution and the documents. That's very important. And I think some of the major reasons why they don't know is because they are preoccupied in other activities that's not conducive to knowing and even having the mindset of sovereign people. So I think that the cultural practices that they take on from the United States and other entities that keep them from wanting to be persons of leading themselves. You know, a lot of people are so bogged down into doing things that don't make any sense, and their minds are conquered. This is exactly why we're here right now today, to be about a part of the change agent of yes. starting to eliminate the practices that keep people from being sovereign, so mm-hmm. we can become sovereign through the changing of our mindset. And
yes.
that's exactly why this platform has been created, you know, through inspiration from Professor Ayman Rahn, the Black Studies Department out of Long Beach State. That's one of the entities that brought this on. So very important information the brother mentioned when he talked about these documents that people look to for, you know, their countries and all of that. So that's very important. Well, I want to get to Brother Mashinda and Kadana. So Kadana, Jacob. Hello? Maybe she stepped away. Okay, Brother Mashinda.
Kadana? Yeah. Yeah, she's probably preoccupied.
Okay, Brother Mashinda.
She was calling from work, you know.
Okay. Yeah. Brother Mashinda? We didn't say it a lot here this evening, so he may be preoccupied. All right, back to you, Brother Chiwara.
Yeah, it is so important. It is so important that we understand what age we're in. We are in an age where anytime you hear me use the word energy, I'm speaking of what the world over is referring to as God. I did, and you can go back in the community education network and see the presentations that I did on that issue, where I brought out the fact that this God, the only thing that can identify in this world in which we now live, is energy, fits the identity of God perfectly. And you know, you can go back and look at that. So one of the most important things, as I mentioned before, is knowing who we are. Now, if a tiger or if a gorilla gave birth to itself it would be a tiger or a gorilla. Now, if energy gave birth to itself, it would give birth to energy. Energy is not going to give birth to anything else other than energy. So if God said, come, let us make man in our image and likeness and after our kind, it would make sense that then man would be the image of God. This is what we all came here as new beings, new births, and were taught that God said, come, let us make man in our image and after our likeness. And so if God is energy, because energy cannot be created or destroyed, energy is eternal, everlasting. Energy is immortal. There's no beginning to energy, no end to energy. Well, it's this exact description what their writings in their books teaches us. And they go further to say that, which is the King James Version, to say that this was translated from the other tongues, many different tongues. And as my brother said, Ethiopia has one of the oldest form of Christianity. And His Imperial Majesty caused a new translation to be translated during his reign. So we have to understand that we are energy. We have to accept that. If we do not accept that, then we will not know energy. We will not know how powerful we are. We will not know that there's nothing that we cannot do. We will not know that we are unstoppable, because we're not accepting the fact that we are energy, aka God. Because that has been bred out of us. We knew that. Our ancient ancestors, that's why when they see us do things and they can't understand how are we doing this, they don't understand that it's ancestral knowledge. This is knowledge that is hidden in our DNA. Our sovereignty is ancestral knowledge. How will we rebuild the civilizations that we have built before and build them even greater? Until we accept our ancestral knowledge, until we accept who we truly and really are, that we are the breath that we breathe and not the flesh that we live in. Until we understand that we are big G, we are gods with a capital G and goddesses with a capital G. Not like the colonizers told us, no, you're little G, you're little, you can't be big G. Nobody can be big G. You're little. They keep telling us that over and over again. Well, Marcus Garvey said, I will return in the whirlwind. We have to understand that when we speak as a people, not just other ears, ethnicities' ears hear us. All of the earth and all of creation is aware of us and knows us. We are kin and kith to creation itself, to nature itself. These are our brothers and sisters, the earth and the sea and the skies. And when we begin to protect them, when we begin to clean them up, when we begin to respect them and honor them, which is what we did before. They said, oh, these are pagans and all this business. They said that we were 3/5 of the human being. Well, Gabriel Ayibo proved that we are 5/3 and that they are 3/5. And what they did was stole our identity, and not just our identity. They stole our character, our personality. And to this day, everything they do is a reflection of us. They want to be us. I'm talking about every other, not just Caucasians. I'm talking about every other ethnic group. And it's also proof that we are the ones with 100% human DNA. Not a trace of Neanderthal. Not a trace of canine. Feel none of that. This is not, you know, philosophical or ideological. This is biological and physiological facts. Until we begin to accept who we are, then I believe we will just continue, many of us will, you know, but when we identify with those who are of like frequency, and then we combine those frequencies together. We begin to unite, as we are doing here in the Community Education Network, sharing information. You know, and one day we will soon have our own total network where we won't be on a Zoom. It will be on a, you know, another network that belongs to us totally and absolutely. So, you know, I'm very pleased to be here. I'm very pleased to see Brother Ernest here, Sister Carlene, Brother Mashinda. I would love to hear from Brother Mashinda if he's there. I'd love to hear from Kadana. This is her first time, and I'm so happy to see her here. It's been a long time, and she understands a lot. I've been with her for quite some time. She's a true sister. I want to just give her, you know, all the encouragement I can. She's a single mother, raising four young men. Her eldest is 13. And I'm telling you, she's a great mother. She's a great mother. Her life is not easy, but she's a great mother, and she's achieved great things. And I'm very proud of her. And my brother David, you know, we got a lot of work to do, and we're doing it. We'll continue to do it. And through this platform, Community Education Network, I hope David will come back as a guest. You know, Brother Rasa Key is more than happy to, you know, bring new energy and new vibrations that benefits the community. We all need to be competent and not incompetent. As Brother David is speaking, we all need to know not just the Constitution themselves, but the Constitution is words on a paper, but to know that we are the Constitution. We are the Constitution. When we understand that we are the Constitution, we'll begin to look at that those words on a paper with a different light. We'll be able to ingest them and let that information assimilate into our very core. And we'll be able to construct our own constitution that speaks to our own self-determination, to our own self-reliance and self-sufficiency. And we'll be able to sustain and maintain the generations here and now. We have to change concepts. We have to change our faculty of thinking. We have to modify it, because a lot of it is based on lies and flat out 100% lies and half truth. But none of it is based on 100% truth. None of it. None of the information we have gathered for generations and generations and generations and generations is pure truth. We coming from pure truth with our relationship with creation, nature, with energy. We created every single thing that can be thought of being created. We are the beginning with Henrietta Lacks, the immortal gene, Albert Perry, the oldest known Y chromosome. I mean, what more do we need? The earliest Caucasian is Cheddar Man. What more do we need? These are real true information. You know, and a lot of the stuff you see our people carrying on with today that look totally anti-self, totally bizarre, totally out of character is because of the epigenetics handed down, the terror and the horror and the confusion and the conforming and just the flat out erasing of our memories is playing itself out now that we are being renewed, is playing itself out now. To keep us subdued in this oppressive state of consciousness. And we must, you know, as Rasta, because Rasta is four eye, and then we identify Rastafarian or Rastafari, and we identify Rastafari and connect it to us because that is evidence of our royal bloodline and lineage. This is why His Imperial Majesty came and sat upon the throne, connects us to the ancient throne of King Solomon and David, Menelik I, Menelik II, that came and proves and shows that we are a royal people, royalty in this modern time through His Imperial Majesty Haile Selassie. But we are Rastas, we are liberators, we are resistors, we resist oppression, we resist immorality, we resist unrighteousness, we resist imbalance, we resist corruption, we resist stripping away of our dignity and taking away our sovereignty. We resist. Rasta is resistance. Blackness is resistance. And we've been doing that for generations and generations, from the eons of time. So, you know, I really appreciate, love the Community Education Network and its host, Brother Ras Aki Maskani, and all the beautiful brothers and sisters. As I said, Mashinda, Carlene, as is new, and Kadana is new, love that. And my brother, for the first time, Global High Chief David Cook, you know, Mansa Adudu. Yes, and Ernest McBride, brother Ernest, you're a pleasure. I love to hear you express yourself. You know, we got to do much more of this. And brother Amon Ra, you know, brother Amon Ra, you are a beacon. To say the least, you are a beacon. You know, I am very honored to be in your presence. You know, and I hopefully we will, as I build on this side, we will be building a lot. And what at one point, everybody need to come visit us in Jamaica now. We are going to hook up, you know, Brother Ernest, you and your wife is welcome once we establish and set up certain things in Jamaica to come forth in Jamaica and spend a day or two or even a week as long as you want to. We're gonna build what we need to build. And everyone will be boots on the ground, take a fact-finding trip, you know, and see, come to the Nyan Kopun global government and experience true Jamaica. And if you're ever in Atlanta, Georgia, you'll be able to come to Wellness on Wellborn, which is in construction right now. And Brother David is truly an angel. Truly an angel. And I'm gonna tell you why I say that. I used to be a bus driver, and one day I was driving the bus. And it was the AM. And there was a passenger that was running late on the other side of the street, not on the side that I was driving on, but she had to cross over. So I went to the next bus stop and I sat there and I waited for her. And when she came onto the bus, the first word that came out of her mouth was, "You are an angel." And I said, "Wow. It's not too hard to be an angel, is it?" You see how easy it was? I said, it dawned on me. I said, "Dang, it's not, you are an angel. It doesn't take much to be an angel. Just have good morals." You know what I mean? The world we live in has been stripped of morality. Only immorality seems to rule the world when children can be starved and innocent people can be bombed and destroyed and the whole world says nothing. When the perpetrators of such a crime can be found guilty in a world court and no leader of no nation stands up and says, and arrest them. When, you know, arrest doesn't mean exactly to incarcerate. Arrest just simply means to stop them, to stop that. When immorality rises its head up and uses starvation and that type of thing against innocent children and others around the world, this is typical marauder, colonialist, imperialist, neo-colonialist behavior in modern times where they say we're living in civilized time. That's uncivilized behavior. And so when you see that happening, this is the reason why the people are the way they are today, because immorality is sitting on the throne of authority. Immorality. And it's time for immorality to be vacated. We do not have to accept the parasite that sucks our blood without remorse and kills our very being and our ability to strive without remorse, not even without a thank you. These are the days and the time when God Almighty, energy, and whatever name anyone may call that one, this is the time when we have been given the God order. This is what Gabriel Yibo said. This is a God order. God Almighty's grand unified theorem, Gagat. Spoke to him the other day. Good people give advice and tells. That's why they killed the leader. What's his name? I forget his name. African leader there during COVID, they killed him because he would not open his country up to the pharmaceuticals to come in and vaccinate his people.
Is it Gaddafi?
No, the other one. Chikumbutsu.
Magufuli. Magufuli.
Yes. I mean, we have to understand that when you see what's going on in the Sahel with Burkina Faso, Niger, and Mali, and then those are the three in the forefront. That's the tip of the arrow. But there are many other African nations that is with these the Sahel Confederation. You know, when you see that, this is the example that we have to deal with. Meanwhile, in America, we have problems battling blacks or battling blacks. You know, we have FBAs, you know, trying to defend their position as foundational black American, and they are justified for doing that. But truth is, the African people, the people that are born in Africa and come to America, the people that are born in the Caribbean and come to America, are not really fighting Americans. We got to understand that these people have been corrupted to look at the black man in America as not his brother. And the black man in America has been conditioned to look at the African from Africa and the Caribbean man from the Caribbean and the black man from South America as different. Each of us have been gifted. Each black person from wherever they come from on the face of this planet, because they found the same immortal gene in people in Suriname. They found the same immortal genes in black folks throughout Africa. So we are not separate people. We may be separated by oceans and rivers, but we're not separated. We are the same by identity. And this is why the word black is used. It's not that we're black. We clearly see that we're not black. We're brown. You know, with different shades. But there are some people, some of us, that are seriously black. That is a fact. But we use the term black simply, we use the term black simply to make a statement that says your identity will never leave you. Why wasn't it a problem during the oppression, the slavery, the enslavement of our people? They didn't care where you came from. They went by your identity. So why do we have a problem today in accepting our identity as one globally? That's why it's the Nyan Kopone global government. Because you're not just speaking of right there in off the coast of Georgia, you have the Gullah people. They don't talk about the Gullah, they talk about Seminole. They say the Seminole Wars, but those were Gullah Wars. Those were Gullah Wars. And they don't talk about what's going on with the Gullah Islands right now, how they're trying to gentrify it. So, you know, we need to know who we are. We need to become competent. And like my brother said, you know, study Constitution, because that's a part of the whole thing, knowing your rights, knowing what rights are out there for you, and actually activating those rights, standing up. That's why I spoke of courage. It will take courage. No one has to be brave, because it don't take bravery. It takes courage. Courage is more consistent. Courage is more persistent. Courage is a stronger form of bravery. Bravery is like a spurt for a moment, but courage is ongoing. You know, it's something that we do without fear. We had courage. We prayed with courage. We studied with courage. And we never failed. And we're still conquering, and we're going forth to conquer still yet more of ourselves. Thank you, Brother Russ Muscon.
Thank you, Brother Chiwara, Brother David Cook, Professor Amin-Ra, Carlene White, Ernest McBride, Carlene. Thank everybody for being here this evening. Very good discussion. We need to do it more often, which we always do anyway. So now I just want to say who's coming on next week. We have two guests on Wednesday, like we had today. We have Sister Sonia. She's a person that works in the finance industry. And then she has her cousin coming on, Nikesia, and she's a therapist, a mental health therapist. And the topic is mental health blues during the holidays. So that'll be a timely thing. It's right on the 24th. Very timely. How people get caught up in these holidays and wreck their mentality for it. But, you know, I have my thoughts about it, and I'm pretty sure everybody else do too. Professor Ra, are you there? All right, Professor Ra. He said we have a guest next Tuesday, so hopefully that happens. If not, we'll have the Black Community News Forum like we do all the time when we don't have a guest on Tuesday. But everybody continue to have a great day. Each one teach one in Conscious Corner. We are going to take our pause.